Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. No Carter Rodriguez on this week's episode, but every disappointment in my eyes is always an opportunity. And what an opportunity I have today to welcome back my buddy, host of the Eurostep podcast, Ty Windisch. Ty, how's it going, buddy?
Well, great. I mean, I host a Bucks podcast, so, you know, we're mere months away from the Bucks being named champions. They're already a distant third in title odds for the next season, which is the most Bucks way to win a championship. But
yep.
I'm great. Nobody can take away, like Giannis said, nobody can take this away from us.
Exactly. The reason I wanted to have you on is because the NBA schedule has dropped, and that means it's forecasting season. We're not going to do the whole how many national TV games did you get? Is this disrespect? Blah, blah, blah. I find that to be the least interesting talk this time of year. But I thought it would be fun to break down the Eastern Conference as it currently stands. Obviously, there is still the potential for some changes, whether or not Ben Simmons gets traded, Lauri Markkanen's still undecided. A lot of these teams can still make kind of minor moves on the margins. But I thought it would be fun to break down the Eastern Conference into four tiers. Tier one, threat to win the East. Tier two, top eight lock. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have eight teams as a top eight lock, just the ones that are confident. Tier three, teams in the play-in mix. And tier four, well, Chet seems fun for those teams that do not appear to be a play-in threat in any way, shape, or form. Ty, before we get into kind of our rankings and where each team falls within those tiers, what is your impression of the kind of collective offseason that the Eastern Conference had? Because it does seem like it has improved in somewhat meaningful ways.
Yeah, what I like about the East, what I go into most every offseason rooting for now, that especially the last about year or so, you know, the Bucks core more or less locked in, and nothing is locked in for super long term in the NBA. We know how hashtag this league is, but the Bucks are like trying to do a very Spursian thing and like, you know, have the same core players as long as they can. Obviously, like we saw with Bledsoe, if they feel like they have to make a move, it's not like they won't, but they just won a championship. I don't think we're going to see Chris, Drew, Giannis, maybe even Lopez go anywhere for a little bit. So what I go into each offseason thinking is like, let's not get another Nets, right? Like, let's not have another team that's a terrifying super team that the Bucks would have to go through. I don't think we got that. I mean, the Lakers right. are a different thing. It's definitely not in the East. We did not get that. Although there's some hezzy tween splash accounts that thinks the Bulls are that. We didn't actually get that. And that's always good.
Don't forget Heat Twitter. They feel very confident that they're about to make it out of the East.
17-time MVP Kyle Lowry. A good player. But they got better too. But what I like is like the whole middle class and almost the whole conference really feels like they were just like, let's just see how we can get better. I mean, some teams like the Pacers just kind of shuffled stuff around. But most teams, it seemed like earnestly, whether it's because of the Bucks or the Hawks or the Knicks or just because of the lottery odds, for whatever reason, they were like, we're actually going to try and add talent. There's a lot of free agents. The market at the top is kind of squished. You can get good players for reasonable contracts, which feels like it wasn't the case for a few years there, especially if you're not a Brooklyn or Lakers type team. And I just think overall, there's not many teams, if any, in this conference where you're like, oh, like it's laughable. Like they're going to get smacked every night. Like just pencil that in as a win. I think that's really good for the East and for basketball. And I think it may mean that there's like a ton of teams who finish with 40 some wins, 30 some wins, but I think it's going to be good. I think night to night, the competition level is going to be pretty high. And I think it should make for some interesting playoff series, even if I only have two teams with a real shot of winning this thing as it stands right now.
Yeah, the middle class of the Eastern Conference definitely got a little more robust, I would say. Like it's deeper for sure. I'm not 100% sure how that's all going to play out, but even looking at the schedule as it dropped, the Cavs have a pretty tough start where 19 of their first 25 games come against teams that made the playoffs last year. And of those six games against teams that missed the playoffs, you have the Hornets twice, Toronto, the Warriors, who I think we understand kind of the asterisk of how they missed the playoffs and they should be better, then the Pistons and Magic once each. So like on every single night, there's not a lot of given wins for the better teams. Forget a team like Cleveland that's young and looking to take that next step. But the Bucks are a team that is not looking to take that next step. And I would like to hear you rank your tier one of the Eastern Conference. I'll let you go first as our guest.
There's obviously some bias involved here. I will say, I always give teams who make and win the finals a bump the next year. I think I had the Heat in my top tier coming into this last year.
That's a pretty reasonable policy.
They won, right? Like, they won a lot. I think it shouldn't be discounted. So I have the Bucks first. They just won the title. They retained almost the whole team except for PJ Tucker, which sucks, but they added some other role players. I think they're probably deeper positionally than they were last year. Not that they're going to be dramatically better, but they still have Giannis who, you know, whenever a guy is 26, I think turns 27 in December, and we just saw him play his best basketball ever in the finals after his best playoff run ever. You got to feel pretty good about having that guy on the team. I think the Nets are great. I think the Nets probably have a higher ceiling, but medium outcomes matter, as we saw, you know, in the Eastern Conference semis this past postseason. And they're a really good team. They'd be really hard to beat for anybody, the Bucks included. But I have Bucks and then Nets, given my team, of course, and the reigning champs, the benefit of the doubt. But that's it for my top tier. I have only four teams in the next tier, and then I think six in the tier after that. So I really have an interesting middle class. But despite, you know, the Heat, the Sixers still exist. I don't think either of those teams are really going to beat the Bucks as they stand right now, or the Nets, excuse me.
Yeah, and I know you were upset about PJ Tucker leaving and kind of the optics of that situation, but just looking at the Bucks roster, I do feel like they're a better team. Like, you look at adding Grayson Allen, adding Dante DiVincenzo, who was out for that title run, George Hill, Rodney Hood isn't reliable, but that's another guy that has upside that can kind of give you some shot creation when you're lacking that, bringing back Bobby Portis. Like, I think they are going to be a better team. That being said, I did pick Brooklyn as my number one team for tier one, Milwaukee number two, and I did put Philly in there. I put Philly in there, and I don't know what I'm doing there. I keep trusting them year after year. I thought the loss to Atlanta was embarrassing. Obviously, the Ben Simmons situation is a little tricky, but I would imagine that if Ben Simmons gets traded, it's going to be for real value and potentially to make the fit better. So I just gave them the benefit of the doubt because I can see a scenario where things break right for the Sixers. I would not necessarily trust them, but there's enough upside there that I feel like they can win the Eastern Conference. Is there any Ben Simmons type trade that you feel like would kind of scare you as a Bucks fan? Like, if there was any of the reported deals, really, do you think that there's a way that the Sixers can get into that tier one in your eyes?
You know, it sounds ridiculous, but I almost feel like they would have to get a Dame or a Beal, and I don't think they're going to be able to get Beal. I think Beal is going to give it at least this year. I think he's a free agent after this year. Mm-hmm. But I actually kind of like the Wizards offseason. I think it's going to be a better basketball situation. We'll get to the Wizards, but I don't think Beal would. And again, it's like a Washington and Sixers trade seems a little far-fetched too. I think if they were going to trade Beal, I don't know if they'd want to keep him. What, that's the same division, right? So I don't know if that's going to happen. But if they were able to get Dame, then of course, it's like, I mean, this was my thing last year when Harden was on the table, is if you get Embiid, a guy like that to run two-man actions with, suddenly, like, they're just horrifying offensively. And you know, just because they have Embiid in the middle, when he's out there, they're going to be a great defensive team too. So that's the kind of two-way brilliance you worry about. But like, let's say they get, you know, some of those mythical Portland young guys who are never actually that good, and CJ for Simmons. I think maybe they get better. The fit is better. I don't know if that terrifies me if I'm mm-hmm. the Bucks or the Nets, though. Like, I don't know if a CJ McCollum level guy does it for me. Yeah. So I don't think they're going to get Dame. I just don't assume they do. We'll see. I don't know what's going to happen. It's kind of a hilarious situation right now. But
they're definitely tier 1B. Like, my confidence in Milwaukee and Brooklyn is by far the highest. Like, I feel like they probably are going to be the conference finals. Like, that's just the way I see this going, unless something really unforeseen happens. But you look at the defense that the Bucks have, and I think you're right to be confident. And if I was in your shoes, I'd probably be ranking Milwaukee number one. But knowing that you are coming on the podcast, I need to be a little bit of a contrarian. You know, it's not sports talk radio, but you still have to do it every now and then in the podcast game. So for tier two for me, I put Miami, Atlanta, and Boston. Those were the only teams I was confident enough to say those teams are going to be top eight locks. I do think Atlanta isn't as good as their regular season would have, or sorry, their playoff run indicated. Like, I don't think they're necessarily a true conference finals team. Philly choked. And once again, I don't know why I put them in tier one, because they proved me year after year after year that they don't have it. But you know what? I put them in tier one anyways. But I do really, really like what Atlanta's building. I just wonder if maybe this is going to be at least a stretch where they have a little bit of a letdown to start the season, where they really kind of feel themselves as a conference finals team and they have to rediscover that fire that got them to be such a successful team. But I love their drafting. I love the players that they have. Retaining Collins is big. But yeah, Miami, Atlanta, and Boston was how I ranked that, even though I have very little confidence in Boston. What's kind of your tier two for the East?
It's hilarious because we have 3 through 6 in the exact same order. So my tier two was Sixers, Heat, Hawks, Celtics. So I think the Hawks are fascinating to me. And the Sixers, like, get out of the second round, pal. Like, come on, get out of the second round. You can be in tier one. You haven't made it as far as Trae Young's Hawks. So that's you're not getting in my tier one until you do that. But I think Trae looking like he can actually be that guy, which I did not buy into that before the playoff run. And again, it's a small sample size, the playoffs always are. But Trae Young, like, being a bad MF-er, so to speak, that does give me a little boost. They're still below the Heat to me. I think that Heat team, I think there's a lot of outcomes for that team. Like, they're very old, right? They're super old. I mean, that's the Lakers thing. But you feel a little bit better betting on LeBron, who, like, defies every piece of logic ever, than Jimmy Butler and Lowry and everything else. And, like, if they're young big man, Anthony Davis versus Bam Adebayo, there's just a gap there. But I think the Heat, there's probably should be more urgency with them, right? Like, I don't think, you know, 2 years from now, that core I don't think is going to scare anybody. Like, I don't think Lowry's going to
be. I don't know if they scare people now. Like, I don't really know if they scare.
Yeah.
I look at them as a second round out ceiling. And I know we do get a fair amount of listeners that are Heat fans that like to jump in the mentions. But the main reason for that is, like, I have confidence that they could beat Philly in a series. But in all likelihood, you're playing one of Brooklyn or Milwaukee round two. And I just don't see it. Like, Kyle Lowry kind of shed that playoff choker reputation that he had, but a lot of that had more to do with the fact that his body would break down as the season would progress. This is a guy that's usually near the top of the league taking charges. I don't think Miami is going to be a team that discourages him to do that. They love that grit and grind, the hustle,
the culture,
all that crap. So as a 5'11", 36-year-old guard taking a physical pounding every single night, I'm a little concerned about that. I'm worried about Jimmy's health. We need to see how Tyler Hero reacts to another summer of being in trade rumors and people saying that they don't want him there, that sort of thing. So it wouldn't shock me. Like, I agree that there's quite a few different outcomes for Miami, but I do think that their floor is at least high enough where I'm confident they're going to be a top eight lock, because they have one of the best coaches in the conference for sure. The defense is going to be stout. Like, their offense was not good last season, but that defense got them by, and I anticipate it will remain good. So for those reasons, I still feel pretty good about them being a top eight lock. Boston's the one team I have no real sense of how that's going to go. It's me having them as a top eight lock is more about how kind of muddied tier three is versus confidence in the Celtics with the new coach, with kind of questions at the point guard position and maybe even center. Like, I know they locked up Robert Williams, but he misses a lot of time. Al Horford isn't the player he used to be. So there's definitely questions with Boston. I don't feel like they're some juggernaut as good as their two wings are.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the two wings with them. Honestly, you know, he became more of a punchline than anyone who was actually analyzed this offseason. Getting Schroeder on the deal they got him on, I thought was really big value for Boston. I mean, that's a great value. And they just needed more guards who are actual point guards. Like, I like Marcus Smart. I think, you know, he's going to always make a lot as a Celtic. I think he's very important to what that team is, which is that a good thing? I don't know. Mm-hmm. They've had some good runs. But they needed, I think, some more real point guard style play. Marcus Smart, I look at as more of a combo guard at best. So getting Schroeder, I thought was really nice. I think
if
such
you're
a
going
weird
from
team,
pure basketball analyst standpoint, if you were the Knicks and you got to make their decisions, would you rather have Schroeder over Kemba? Because that's kind of relevant to the Celtics, because that's basically what happened, is that they ended up getting Schroeder over Kemba.
I think I would too.
Just be, well, one, I'm a little risk adverse when it comes to health, but like,
yeah, Kemba's scary.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so that's kind of interesting that like if I'm the Knicks, I probably would have spent more to get Schroeder versus Kemba. And I mean, they are paying Kemba more than Schroeder's being paid. But I do also understand the hometown aspect and the excitement that Kemba's going to generate. And frankly, a higher ceiling than Schroeder has.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think especially if you look at being able to, I mean, they had got off the huge Kemba deal and then OKC eats some money and then he's available for that lower price. Horford felt like if you can get Schroeder and Horford, who it's certainly not a great player, but a useful one. And Robert Williams is just, you know, I think everyone kind of just liked that contract by default. We'll see. I don't know. I don't think we have a ton of tape. And I just think that's not a position. I mean, the Jared Allen deal, some people kind of gave a side eye at, right? Like, we know a lot more about Jared Allen and we have a lot more reason to feel good about Jared Allen than we do Robert Williams.
I would much rather pay Allen at the reported $20 million a year than 14 to Robert Williams, because Robert Williams is a 6'8 center versus a true 7-footer. Yep. He's a year older than Jared Allen, which I think people don't realize just because of how long he's been around. Like, the upside with Jared Allen is much higher, and I think the floor is higher too, because he's been more reliable than Robert Williams is.
Yeah, he's gonna show up and start a lot of games, which I think that was in the Woj tweet, how little Robert Williams has started. And I wasn't thrilled about the Allen deal. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was bad, but I was like, okay, it's a center, you know, it's such a questionable position in the game, but you see the upside of Allen, I think, more than the upside of Robert Williams, for sure. So I think they have a weird team, but you know, they went through a lot of COVID stuff last year. A lot of teams did, but the Celtics did too. I just think Tatum is really good, and they're going to – I can't see them as a play-in team. I just can't. I mean, I know they were 8th seed last year, so they literally just were. But I think even in this East that's better, I think they're gonna be better than I think their detractors think. So, yeah, that's I think that's a pretty good top half, those six teams. I think that – I don't want to say consensus. I'm sure there's people who are going to put some teams that we have in the third tier.
I was about to say, I think that's, I am a little surprised that we completely agree on the top eight, because there are teams below them that have had noteworthy off seasons. So let's get into that tier three. I'd like you to rank them for me. I'm going to pull out a pen and paper here to keep track of it, because I think, I think tier three is going to be a little longer than I would have expected for both of us.
Yeah. So I got to think here for a second about the order I want to read them. I have them in like a light order, but these first four to me, I think are very close.
There's There is so much second guessing with these.
About A and B, I have an A with four teams and a B with two teams, but I'm just going to go with Wizards, Knicks, Bulls, Hornets, and then Pacers, Raptors.
So that is really interesting. Because my tier three is Pacers first.
Oh, wow.
Because Brogdon, LeVert, TJ Warren, Sabonis, and Turner with Rick Carlisle. I just feel like that team has a really high floor and they're going to be really well coached. And there's less turnover with that roster too, whereas Chicago is going to be going through a lot. Chicago I have as my next team, then New York, then Charlotte, then Cleveland, then Toronto, then Washington. Wow. So Washington was your top team, and they are at the bottom of my team.
Oh, no, they were my top. They were my top. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. So I completely disagree on Washington. I think the defense is going to be an absolute disaster for them. I really like Bradley Beal, but there is so many new pieces there, and I think there may be an element of addition by subtraction, but like they made the playoffs because of that Russ run late in the season. I like all their individual pieces. I don't know necessarily how they gel. And I don't trust the coaching to get them to gel early in the season. Like, continuity is such a big thing for me, and that's one of my biggest biases. Longtime listeners of the podcast will know that's something that I always lean towards, because, I mean, I look at Kyrie, Love, and LeBron when they first came together. It's 20 and 21 start, because that stuff takes time. It takes time for guys to learn how to play together. And I just do not trust Washington as at all. Chicago, I knock them for that reason, just because there's so much turnover. I really do like the individual pieces. I just don't know when Lonzo, DeRozan, or LaVine have the ball, what do the other ones in that equation do? Are they going to make an effort to maximize Vucevic, who is probably their second best player? I don't know. So I got a lot of questions there. Then the Knicks is probably my controversial one. So doing the math here, I would have them as 9. And I just don't think they were as good as their record last year. Like, I think they were a really good defensive team, and their path to the playoffs last season is the path I think the Cavs have to follow, of just being a really good defensive team that steals some games. But you look at their two best players, it's Julius Randle and RJ Barrett. Like, when you compare that to the other teams, I don't know what I'm doing there. It's just, I do not have as much confidence in them at all.
The funny thing about the Knicks is I was one of the people who kind of panned their offseason early. I don't love Fournier. I think he's fine. I don't love him.
He doesn't impact winning, right? Like, I think he's a nice player, but throughout his career, he doesn't really move the needle a whole lot.
He hasn't, but I think, like, they have a lot of guys who I like, who I think are talented players. And I think I almost have them where you have the Pacers. I have the Pacers lower. Something's off there. Maybe Carlisle can come in and fix it. I know Bjorkgren was not ideal for them from a chemistry standpoint. I think there's still some issues there. I think they've been trying to ship Brogdon away for so long that, like, I think there's a reason for that beyond just he's a nice trade chip. We'll see.
I really hope you're right. I really hope you're right, because I want some of these teams ahead of the Cavs to fall apart or for things to not work.
I have them as a big, like, things could go disastrously wrong there, even though they do have the talent. For the Wizards, I think their biggest issue is probably, like, 4 or 5s who can play defense. Like, can Thomas Bryant do it? You know, who's the guy that they just got that they loved? I don't know why. Daniel Gafford. They're obsessed with Daniel Gafford. Talk about undersized centers. I think those guys are fine. Really, what I like the Westbrook trade. They made the playoffs because of his incredible run. They seemed to be out of the playoff picture the first half of the year because he was so damn bad. And then in the playoffs, he also wasn't very good. But, like, to swap him out and just get, like, a bunch of serviceable role players. Like, Kuzma is, you know, as a person, annoying. As a player, though, I think he's useful. He's a good player. Like, KCP, I think, is quite a good player who's been really good. I think Dinwiddie is probably not as good as a lot of people think, but I think he's a good starter, and I think he'll pair well with Beal. I just think for them, like, they just needed more guys who can play. Like, I like Aaron Holiday. Trez is interesting during the regular season. Like, I just think it's good for them that they have more guys. So you're like, oh yeah, he can play. I think the Wizards for so long, just they never had wings. They never had depth. I think they have a little bit of it now.
I'm going to hedge a little bit. If Spencer Dinwiddie is the Dinwiddie we've seen in the past, I feel confident enough to put him over Toronto. I just don't know. Like, I could see the Wizards making a midseason pivot as well and offloading some of these guys. Like, a lot of their interesting players that I like Davis Bertans, Rui, like, these guys are going to lose some minutes to guys like Montrezl Harrell, Kyle Kuzma. Like, I just don't know how it's all going to mesh. It's another one of those teams where, like, if I was a playoff team looking to add serviceable role players and guys that fill in, like, Washington has a very long list of those guys. I just don't know how it all kind of clicks together. So for that reason, I'm lower on them than I think most people would be. Charlotte is a team that I'm having a little bit of a trouble getting a read on, because I really like what they're doing. I think their long-term vision is really sound. I love the picks they made, but I do think that they're going to take a little bit of a step back next season, because yes, Cody Zeller missed a lot of time, but Plumlee is a downgrade from that. You're playing Kai Jones as a center, and anytime you're playing a rookie at the five, that's going to hurt a little bit. You lose Devontae Graham, who's a 25-year-old that has a little more experience, and you're replacing him with Bouknight. Like, when you get that much younger, I do have some concerns about how consistent your team is going to be. Now, LaMelo can make a big enough leap that it kind of negates some of those downgrades and makes that youth less meaningful in terms of impacting the wins and losses. But at the same time, LaMelo's missed a he's missed time every year. Like he missed time when he was in Europe. He missed time in Australia. He missed time last season. I don't know if it's fair to say like even his brother misses a bunch of time. Like I just worry a little bit about how consistent that team is going to be going younger and having LaMelo and Hayward as guys that probably are going to miss some time.
That team, I think, in this tier might have the most room. I'll say to move up because I think we both have – I have them fourth in that tier, so that would make them, what, like 10th, basically. I think you had them a little lower.
I have right them 10th. I have them
so 10th. We both have them 10th. That's a team where maybe that could be a team. And I don't think there's a lot of teams like this in this tier. Maybe the Pacers. Maybe I'm excited to talk to you about the Bulls in depth a little bit. But like I think the Hornets could look really good a month in, and which is kind of what happened last year. I mean, for them, injuries is a big concern. You didn't even mention Hayward, which of course, you know, if Gordon Hayward plays 80 games and is super healthy, they're a much better team, and I'd feel pretty confident they're gonna finish top eight. Like they have a lot of talent on this team. Like I think Rozier is quite good. Like a 5-man group of Ball, Rozier, and then you talk about
Hayward,
maybe Bridges.
Bridges, yeah.
Maybe Kelly Oubre, who I'm not super high on, but I think he's a good wing player. PJ Washington, I kind of like. The center position still stinks. I'm higher on Mason Plumlee than most. I think he's a fine, like playable. I like the trade for them, like getting to move up to get a stopgap center when they didn't want to overpay someone. Mm-hmm. They're going to need a better center at some point. Wouldn't think it'd be that hard to find one. We'll see. Maybe that's a trade they make. I'm not sure who they would get, but I think they could be really good. Like if LaMelo takes a step forward and Hayward is healthy, but there are just so many questions. And I think now that they've just rejiggered the roster a little bit, it might take a little while for them to gel. And I think really the reason for me that I made tier two smaller than tier three, it was less about thinking teams are bad, more about thinking there's just a lot of teams who I think are kind of good. And that means that if they're, you know, it's like the Incredibles thing. If there's six teams or there's 10 teams that can make the playoffs, there's 10 teams that might not make the playoffs too. That's the flip side of the limited field. So I think some of these teams have higher upsides than the Hornets. I do like the Hornets though.
Mm-hmm. I do as well. So let's get to the Bulls. I kind of gave the rundown of why I don't necessarily trust them. Like I think end of season Chicago is going to be a much better team than they are early in the year. But I do think it's fair to anticipate some early season struggles from them, maybe a couple months before things start to click. And, you know, like that can be costly when you are talking about an East that is looking to be a whole lot more competitive.
My thing with the Bulls is, my thing with the Wizards is kind of a bet on Beal. I think that this is a big year for Beal. I think there's been a couple, but I think this is a really big year. You know, you want to dispel all the things about empty calories and numbers and all that. Go lead a team of players worse than you to a very good season, right? Lift up that roster. And he has the opportunity to do that if everyone's healthy there. I think they have some talent. This, to me, it's like partly on LaVine, but more so DeRozan. Like, both of those guys really kind of similar criticisms they've seen before. Can they play winning ball? Can they contribute to winning? Can they contribute on the defensive end? That's my question with Chicago. That's why I'm low on Chicago. That's why I do not have them as a confident and top eight finish. Because we've talked about all these other teams are so good. Is that I think this Bulls team, I could see them scoring 120 and losing a lot. Like I just, are they going to win close games? They're not the greatest shooting team. They're good, but not great. You know, DeRozan plays into that. And defensively, you know, you look at a lot of their rotation players, DeRozan, LaVine, Vucevic, Kobe White.
Honestly, Lonzo is a good Lonzo can play good help defense, but his point of attack defense isn't always sound. Like that's not the biggest strength for him. And
you're just asking so much of him if he's supposed to be like him and Pat Williams, who's a second year player who looks fine, but those two guys are their defense in a way. Like that's terrifying to me.
Thad Young was really helpful for them last season too. Like he's still a really, really damn good player and losing him is going to, that's going to be tough. Like I was a little disappointed to see that the Cavs didn't play Chicago a bunch early because I would have loved to get those games in because and correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't have Cleveland in tier three.
No, I've got him. I've got him in the next one. Unfortunately, I'm going to catch some ire, I think. We'll talk about it. Oh, yeah,
you most certainly are, both from me now and from the larger audience. But I would love that, because for Cleveland, beating these tier three teams has to be the priority. You need to have a good record against these teams, because even if they are a little bit better on paper, these are the games you have to win if you want to really help your positioning and get into that play-in mix. Because as it currently stands, I have Cleveland 11th in the East. Now, obviously, things can change if there is a trade before the season, or if they end up being buyers at the deadline. Like, there's so many different things that could impact where they fall. But like within that tier, I don't think they would ever jump out of that tier. I don't think there's any move on the table that's going to put them as a top eight lock this season. But winning those games against Indiana, Chicago, New York, Charlotte, Washington, Toronto, like that's really, really important, because they count double basically when you're talking about a play-in race.
Yeah, seriously. And I do think that that's probably the reason a lot of these tier three teams are in tier three, is just either they're inconsistent or we don't trust them enough. I think the last team we haven't really talked about that we both have in tier three is the Raptors.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll let's go Raptors and then we'll talk some Cavs and kind of why you don't see them in that tier. Now, Toronto, for me, the reason I probably put them either at the bottom or damn near at the bottom of tier three is, one, Siakam's going to miss the first month or two of the season with that shoulder surgery. It's going to take him some time. You lose Kyle Lowry, which really hurts. You got the fourth overall pick and you lost your best player. You're not going to be good. Your second best player is missing 1 or 2 months. That's not going to help. I really have spacing concerns about them, because Fred VanVleet's percentages from three are good. But Fred is one of those guys that never plays at his averages. He's a gunner. Like he's never been an efficient player. He gets those shots up. He has great weeks and he has bad weeks. And if those bad weeks come, do they have enough shooting to make up for that? Because you're going to have Scotty Barnes, Kem Birch, like a whole bunch of these guys on the inside and on the front court that just cannot shoot at all. And I don't know if Gary Trent Jr. and OG Anunoby are enough to really make up for that. I think this is a team that if their defense is good and they get out in transition, they're going to be able to score. But I think in terms of half court offense, I think Toronto might be one of the worst teams in the league next year.
I can't believe they brought Sam Dekker back from overseas.
Oh,
former Cav and former Buck for 5 seconds. I feel like there's almost like this hubris in Toronto. Like, I think they want to take players that everybody else knows are not good and like make it, like Stanley Johnson. Oh, he's a free agent, so he might not be coming back. But like,
yeah,
Bonga is kind of, I don't know if people rail on Bonga as much as Stanimal, but just like, and again, one of these, you talk about guys who aren't great shooters, and Dekker is also that, although he was known as a college sniper, it didn't really translate to the NBA. So the big questions with Toronto, you know, does a guy like OG Anunoby take a step forward? That would be big for them. I think Raptors folks see him as someone with a lot of upside still to go. Like, if he is always just a supersized plus defender with some offensive upside,
yeah,
it's a fine player, but they're probably not going to be very good. If he can, you know, add playmaking and not to kind of a tough comp for them, but take more of a Kawhi-like progression, I don't think he'll ever be Kawhi, but, you know, Siakam maybe is a better comp, you know, add some of that offensive game, even if you're not a superstar on that end. Then they can be really good when Siakam gets healthy.
Yeah.
The other questions are like, does Dragic show up? Does he play there? Do they get rid of him? I don't know what's going to happen there. If he actually plays and is bought in for half a season, that would help them.
That helps a lot. That would help them.
I don't know if that's going to happen. They have a weird team. I like Gary Trent Jr. They don't. I don't know. It's a weird. Precious Achiuwa is going to be a big swing piece for them, which is kind of funny. Yeah, they don't have a lot of shooting. I feel good about them. They're going to be in a lot of, I think they're almost the anti-Bulls. I think they're going to be in a lot of games, but maybe lose late because they can't score, not because they can't get any stops.
Yeah, and they don't really have a ton of playmaking. Like, Fred is a combo guard that's played really well off of Kyle Lowry. He can pass, but you look at Gary Trent Jr.
A lot of trouble scoring in the paint for Fred, too. I think that's something he struggles with. That's going to be tough for them.
Yeah, especially as there's less spacing. Like, when you start the season, I would assume it's Fred, Trent, OG, Scotty Barnes, and Kem Birch. Like, there's not a lot of space there at all. Gary Trent Jr. does not pass. Like, Cavs fans get upset at Colin Sexton averaging 4.5 assists. Gary Trent, you're looking at one for his career, basically. Like, he does not move the ball. OG doesn't really have that playmaking. Like, the Scotty Barnes will bring that to the table, but our team's just going to back off of him because that jump shot spins the wrong direction. Like, there's a lot of concerns there. And how is Pascal Siakam going to react? Like, if things go well early in the season, which I don't anticipate, but if they go well, all right, well, now you're moving Scotty to the bench for Siakam, or are you starting a whole bunch of these guys together? Like, are you starting Siakam at the five over Kim Birch? Like, there's so many questions. And just given the fact that they weren't that great last season and are losing two key pieces and went younger as well, I just do not have a lot of confidence in this team. And the other factor for me with Toronto is I think if they're outside of the play-in mix, we're going to see the exact same thing we saw last season where Masai pulls the plug. Like, I could see him stripping this roster for parts, sending Siakam off. Like, I don't think they have any interest in the play-in. They didn't last year. I don't expect it this year. So for those reasons, I can see them kind of blowing things apart. Whereas a lot of these other teams in tier three, I don't really see that. Like, I can see Washington moving pieces. I don't see Charlotte, New York, Chicago, Indiana, or even Cleveland, like stripping the roster for parts. Like, the Cavs core is pretty locked in place. I don't think those young five guys are being moved. And if they were being moved, it wouldn't be to sell for future assets, right? So
yeah,
that's why I probably have Toronto at the bottom of tier three for me.
Yeah, they're the only team in this group who's shown any stomach for tank. I mean, you mentioned Washington. I think the only way they do is if Beal gives them that tough resolution, right? That I don't want to be here. Yeah. I don't think that they might move stuff around. I think as long as he's committed to play there, they're just going to keep trying. Masai is the only one out of these executives who's been like, we won a title a couple of years ago. We'll eat a bad season if we have to. That's going to be really interesting. Is it's almost tough because they might, the Siakam decision for them maybe is made before he plays a game this year. But
yeah, like I think he misses 2 months, it's still going to take him some time to play into shape. Having those mid-season shakeups is difficult too, because there's really not a lot of practice time. Like, that's something that Cavs dealt with a ton last year, was there was just no time to practice. So when you have a roster that's in flux, it's going to hurt. Like, I'm pretty confident that Cleveland's going to finish higher than Toronto next year.
If Siakam ends up a Golden State Warrior when all is said and done, I think that's certainly very, very possible. It'd be funny if that deal ends up happening, but, you know, now that all the players have names and they aren't just faceless draft picks.
So let's get into Cleveland. Why do you not have them in tier three?
I want more wings, man. I want more wings. That was my thing. So I get there was a – it was funny because at first I hated the Rubio deal. I came to understand it. I do think it's really? not a bad idea to get a backup point guard. But my thing with the Cavs is, like, you know, Sexton is kind of – we talked the combo guards earlier. That's what I see him. I think he does some point guard stuff, even if he's not the point guard that Garland is. Mm-hmm. But I was like, okay, so that's now it's at best Rubio you'd hope is your third best guard if you – say Okoro is a forward. So I think it's fair. We can count him as a wing. A little small, but I think he can defend up.
Yeah,
but
he's 6'6".
He's 6'6", yeah. But I'm not even high on Taurean Prince. I don't think he's – every time Taurean Prince gets traded, the team that traded him, their fans are like, oh, that's good, which kind of tells you – I remember when the Hawks traded him at first to Brooklyn. There were a lot of people looking at just – you pull up the three-point percentage on B-ball ref, and it's like, oh, this guy's great. All the Hawks fans were like, that's fine. We're totally fine with this. It tells you something.
Yeah. Him being healthier might lead to more ambitious shot attempts. Like, and the funny thing is, like, there were complaints that the Cavs needed a wing before they moved Prince, and no one was factoring Prince in. And then when he was gone, you had a few people yell, well, what about Prince? Like, he would have been the perfect second wing off the bench. And, like, to be clear, I still anticipate the Cavs are going to add a wing before the season. So, like, that factors into this. I think I wouldn't be surprised to see something happen on the trade market, and that would certainly help. Like, if you're packaging Jetty in 2 seconds the same way Milwaukee packaged Merrill and their seconds, which were less valuable to get Grayson Allen, like a move like that, I think would make a big difference. Because, like, for as work in progress as this roster is, a lot of this is really spoken for. Like Garland, Sexton, Rubio are going to eat up most of the minutes at one and two. Like I anticipate Garland, in order to get Rubio his 25 minutes, he's probably going to play some minutes at the two, like alongside Rubio. But Okoro is going to log a ton of minutes. Mobley's going to log a ton of minutes. Nance is going to log a ton of minutes. Jared Allen's going to log a ton of minutes. Like, there, it's really the wing. Like the wing is where they really need to address things, and it's going to be interesting to see whether or not they are able to pull something off, because teams aren't like looking to give up good wings.
No, I think it's probably the hardest position to add, because it's like there's such a premium, and so many of the superstar players in the league right now, they're on the wing, right? So if you don't have good wings, it can just be hard to keep up with some of these teams. So, you know, I like Nance. I think Nance is going to help. If he can continue to shoot closer to 38 than 35% or do that, that'd be big for them at some 4 minutes, maybe some 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. But that for me, that's my issue with them. I do think the one and two, they have a good collection of talent there. I'm higher on Sexton than most. I just think when you have a guy you can put up 24, 3 and 4, basically, and add a steal in there, it's just useful. It's more useful than I think the analytics and everything else say. I just think it's good. I like Garland too. So maybe if those guys just take another half step each, maybe they're better than I think by default. For me,
Garland needs to make a leap. Like that is the biggest thing for me, is if my projections that Garland is the highest or was the highest upside guy, Mobley's that now.
Yeah.
But Garland needs to have like an all-star caliber season. You look at the 15 games he played in April, where it's basically 21-7. Like that needs to be his new baseline. If the Cavs are going to be good, he and Garland need to be averaging like a combined 47-48 points per game. And like Garland making the leap, he needs to be the better player. He needs to be better than LaMelo. He needs to be better than a lot of the guys on New York. Like I think there's an argument that he was better than RJ Barrett last season. Like he needs to be that kind of a guy for them to make the leap. I think there's a sense that, okay, well, nobody that's on the roster is going to be a difference maker because they lost last year. When in reality, like that internal growth is the only way, because on paper, there's so many names ahead of them, right? Like there's so many teams that have guys that you recognize as good players. The Cavs really need those guys to become names. Like you need Darius Garland to play like an all-star. Sexton had an all-star caliber like offensive season last year. And you would hope that now one of the biggest weaknesses, that second unit, him playing along Ricky Rubio, is going to make a big difference. Larry Nance being healthier and being available in those second unit minutes. Like that's going to be really, really important for them. And the biggest thing for me, the reason why I'm high on Cleveland, is if you look beyond just the season averages last year, most months they had a really good defense. Like they were at least league average or better.
They started really great, didn't they?
Yeah. And even throughout the year, like March was the one nightmare month where they had the toughest part of their schedule, as well as the most injuries. That's when Nance was out. That's when they were missing Garland and Sexton. Like it skewed all of their numbers to crap. But for the majority of the season, they had a league average defense or better. And you would expect Garland, Sexton, Okoro, Allen all will get better next year. Okoro making a leap to be a more functional offensive player, not necessarily a hub, but someone that fits within the offense would be big. But if they can get that defense where they're at least league average or better, I think that's going to keep them in a lot of games. And as you're playing teams that have roster turnover, that are looking to kind of find an identity, you can steal games a la what New York did last season.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I do. It's just that hole with the three, man. Like, I like the one and two combo. I like Okoro. I worry a little bit about the shooting. We'll see. I think, speaking about Garland, he always looked like a shooter, right? And then the shots just started. That's so – must feel great. You know, like, mm-hmm. It was like he takes pretty audacious threes. The fact that I think he shot, like, 39.5%. It's really good. That feels good. That was great to see. Do we think Mobley starts at the four? Is it going to be Garland, Sexton,
Okoro, Mobley?
Okoro, probably Mobley. So like they're just young core starting five. That's pretty cool.
It is cool. And like that would be the kind of the reason why you would have some doubt for them, right? Like I think it's really important to have those vets off the bench, because yes, that will be the starting five, but I think it's fair to assume The Sexton will be the first sub out like he always is because he leads the second unit. Everyone asking for him to be the sixth man so he can play those minutes. He already plays all of those damn minutes right now. And when you're cycling in guys like Larry and Rubio and hopefully another experienced wing, you can hope that that can kind of balance things out and raise the floor for them a little bit. But I do think Darius Garland is the most important part of this because he needs to make a leap, because when he's playing well, it makes things easier for absolutely everybody. And point guards, especially going into year three now, like he did an interview with our friend Chris Manning where he said, yeah, last season was better, but like my confidence is through the roof right now. Last season's still not the standard that I want to be at. Like he needs to be that kind of all-star caliber guy in order for the Cavs to have a shot. And that's the biggest swing piece. So because I'm so high on Garland, that's why I feel pretty confident kind of putting them around 11th. I think maybe they can sneak into that top 10. And if they're close to the plan or in plan position at the trade deadline, maybe you go and you make some moves and you try to add some pieces. But yeah, like it's really going to come down to the defense as well as the growth of Garland for me. I think that's really, really the keys for next season.
I think what should be probably good for Cavs fans listening, I don't think we're that far off on where we have them. I know we have them in different tiers, but I was just thinking, like, what would be the best realistic case scenario for Cleveland? And I think the way they got there would be different. But, like, kind of what the Hornets season was like last year, where you walk away from that season going, oh, we really like their young guys. The whole league is like, oh, they have good young guys. If they can make a Hayward, and I know the order is off. They already had Hayward last season, but, like, you know, maybe find a way to make that Kevin Love salary spot a wing who can play. That's huge. Like, do something like that a year from now. But if the whole league after this season, you know, they finish with 33, 34 wins, sniffing around the playoff for a lot of the year, the play-in, excuse me, they probably don't make it. Maybe they're close. But everyone's like, we really like their young guys. They should be a year away from being quite good. And if they can add that piece in the offseason, then it's like, okay, then we can see them easily being out of the play-in, the good way out of the play-in the next year, which must be tough. I know it's been a long rebuild, or at least it feels like it. There was a title less than 10 years ago, 5 years ago only, but it's been a couple rough years. But I do think that seems like a really good outcome for the Cavs. If everyone around the league is like, oh, Garland, Mobley, you know, Okoro has a nice year, Sexton's still there. Either they keep him or make some sort of decision there. And I feel like there's so much animosity around this discussion. He's a good young player with some flaws, and they're going to figure it out one way or another. But I don't know. I think they could very easily be in that position next year. I do think there's some talent on this roster.
Yeah, the potential on defense for that front court of Okoro, Mobley, and Allen is nuts. Like, I think Mobley and Allen being able to successfully play drop coverage and really kind of close the gaps and their ability to contest. Like, one thing I really liked with Jared Allen is, even though he is a switchable big, the Cavs didn't rely on that. They didn't just give up the switch easily every single time because they understand that this is a guy that can really move his feet. He's got a massive wingspan. He can contest and kind of close those gaps. So I do think, especially with JB Bickerstaff's reputation on the defensive end, like, he is a very good defensive coach. And adding Rubio as a point of attack defender is going to be huge. Like, really, when you look at it last season, I just really feel like the Cavs were better than their record. And I might be wrong. That might be my blind spot where I'm expecting a modest leap next season from where I think they were last season, not where they actually finished. And that might be where I ultimately fall short in kind of my prognostication. But yeah, like, if the defense is good enough to keep them in these games, if Garland is playing at an all-star caliber, I'm not worried about Sexton. Like, Sexton's going to be better.
I think he's Sexton. He gets better every single year.
Good
idea. Like, yeah.
Like, and if you were going to make the Sexland backcourt viable, having Okoro, Mobley, and Allen is a very, very strong way to compensate for them on defense. So obviously a trade would make a difference if they did something. So one of the hypotheticals we threw out, because Chris Fedor had mentioned the name of Terrence Ross, if it was like Jetty and second round picks, kind of like a Grayson Allen deal for someone like Terrence Ross, would that change how you feel about the Cavs if they got not a great wing, not even maybe a starting caliber wing, but a really quality rotation guy like that?
I think I would like that a lot, actually. Like, I feel I'm not even huge on Ross, but I do think he's been one of the more consistent buckets off the bench guys in the league. Like that Lou Williams kind of, you know, we know that we can get him, we can get like 16 to 19, depending on how much he plays and how many shots he takes a night. And I do think there's so much value in that of a team like the Cavs who, you know, through injuries and just not having as deep of a roster last year, there was some truly rudderless minutes. And that is why I kind of came around on the Rubio trade too. Like if you're locked in when healthy at 48 minutes of plus average or better, at least true point guard play, mm-hmm. that does a lot for your ceiling offensively. Like that changes a lot of things. I think Ross would help a lot there too. And just give you some lineup flexibility. Like if you feel like you just need that extra spacing and you're not as worried about defending other wing players, Garland, Sexton, Ross, or maybe Garland, Ross, Okoro. Like you can make a switch there if you want to. I would like that flexibility for them. That's my issue with them is I just think they are short a wing. If one of like Jetty, and I know they took flyers on like Windler and Wade. Like if one of those guys had become what we talked about, Jetty being on the verge of becoming what, like 4 years ago? Yeah. I think I called him a big playmaking wing and put him in the camp of some truly great players, which now doesn't feel great. But like if he had, it's just like, oh, if Chetty had become that, I'd feel a lot better. But so yeah, if they could flip him like that, like the Bucks did for Allen, that would feel nice for sure. And I don't think that's a ludicrous proposition, although it's funny that Ross is still there. I don't know what Orlando wants to do. I have them next, I think, actually. But
yeah. Orlando's a real funky team. And like Dylan Windler, especially when you look at his season-long stats, like there was a stretch, basically a two-month stretch, where Windler was contributing in ways other than shooting. Like he was shooting the ball well, but he was hitting everything. Like he was really like contributing, doing nice things. He'd make such a big difference. And like I think he was over 42% from three, 45% from the floor. Like the theory of Dylan Windler makes such sense, but I just don't feel good like counting on it. Look, that's a high upside thing. And it's funny that we haven't even touched on Kevin Love. Like Kevin Love as an additional big would make a big difference. Like in theory, playing him with Mobley to give him spacing and maybe body up the post up centers, like that could be a role that makes a difference. I just don't know where that situation is going to go. So once again, we're in a situation where the Cavs are stuck with a lot of unknowns. We don't know how this is going to go, but there's paths to being competitive in this play-in. It's just going to come down to, okay, are they actually going to overachieve? Are these young guys that have shown flashes capable of putting it together? Because year three Garland, year four Sexton, Jared Allen just turned 23 years old. He's going to improve too. Like there's a lot of opportunity for internal growth. It's just, does that internal growth mesh with the growth of the other players on the young core? And does it translate to winning? I think it needs to translate to winning. If this season ended with them getting the 10 seed, they were competitive in the play-in game, but they ultimately missed the playoffs. Like I would consider that to be a successful season, because if they are propelled to that seeding by the young players, there's an avenue for growth. I know everyone made fun of Jared Allen for saying, hey, in 2-3 years, maybe we'll be a 5 seed. That is a very reasonable projection. Like if you go from 10 seed to 5 seed, or 9 seed to 5 seed the following season, or even the 6 seed, like that is something that would have me excited. Like maybe it doesn't do it for some people that are championship or bust, but I just don't think that can be the mentality when in 2 years, your core five is still all going to be 25 and under.
Yeah. I just think people need to be more open-minded to how team building in the league has been working these past few years. I mean, I think if you have the Giannis KD level player, LeBron level player, that's great. You know, there's paths to being really good and contending without them. And, you know, you never know when you can. I like to use the Raptors as a comp when they made the Kawhi trade, because they were that team where maybe they were really good in the regular season, didn't have the playoff upside. Like, I think getting to there, if you can sustainably be there, you're pretty much always one fortuitous player becoming available away from being, you know, a champion. And I think that's the way you have to approach team building. I think this idea that, you know, you should do what the Thunder do constantly all the time until you land that player you believe in, I don't think it's realistic. I don't think it's a good way to do things. I mean, you talk about, I think people crown the process a success. Sixers have yet to make it to the conference finals. The Hawks did it in like 2 years because they didn't do that, right? Like they got Trae Young, they were bad, and they could have had Luka, but not different conversation, but they said right away, oh, we think this guy's good. Let's put talent around him to help him. And lo and behold, they were really good right away. And I just think that that's a much better thing to do than this. Oh, we like Garland. We like Sexton. We like Mobley. We don't think we have, we're just going to keep tanking. Like, no, I think it's not the right way to go. I think building something sustainable is the right way to go. So again,
they were like a game and a half out of the play-in in April last year.
Yeah.
And Garland and Sexton late in the year were better than they were at the start of the year. They had tons of injuries. Like, there's reasons to be a little more optimistic. And I would hope that in a less condensed schedule, these guys wouldn't miss as much time. Like, Garland only missed 6 games his rookie year. Sexton had never missed a game before last season and missed double-digit games. Larry, yes, he missed time, but we're talking about like 10, 15 games, not 30, 40 games missed. Like, there's reason to be optimistic. And of course, like, one of the big reasons the Hawks made the leap last season was a previous midseason addition of Clint Capella ended up really gelling after coming in with camp. And I think you're hoping the same thing happens with Jared Allen, who is now kind of locked in as a core piece. You're hoping that he kind of makes that leap and everything clicks the same way versus starting the year with Andre Drummond and having that drama kind of hanging over your head.
I mean, and a guy who was talked about as such a great player, I think playing on the minimum this year, Drummond, or just above it. I do think they got better at the center position. I mean, you're so good at this. You talked me into the Cavs. I mean, they have the defense they already had. I think Allen helps that. I think offensively, they'll have, be a little more consistent now, adding Rubio.
This is my lane, man. I'm projecting them to be 11th in the East right now, and I'm still sounding like an optimism. It's realistic optimism, baby. That's the name of the game. Let's finish it off with Tier 4. I actually have Detroit over Orlando. I do too.
I misspoke. So mine is Cavs. Mine is Cavs, Pistons, Magic. I mean, Detroit, I think I would have them down. I think the Magic are clearly the worst team in the conference, looking at it more. Like, Beef Stew and Sadiq Bey having like really, I like Isaiah Stewart, Beef Stew. It looks good. Like, I think the funny thing about Detroit is almost everything they did, everyone hated, including some of those picks. Those two guys look like they're legit rotation guys in year one in a COVID season, and they're not top picks. But even if you just ignore, Killian Hayes' existence, who a lot of people, I think both of us were really high on Hayes going into that draft.
I liked Hayes a lot.
Didn't have a great rookie year. We'll see. Hopefully he can turn it around for Detroit. But I think they have good players. I like that they just kept Diallo. Jeremy Grant looked awesome, and I think he's going to have to do a little less this year. And then you add Cade Cunningham into the mix. Like, I think they're going to be a fun team. I think they're certainly, they need depth. They need to build out that roster around those young guys. But I think they could be a team where, like, the thing about these, and Olynyk is good, although I hate him. I think the listeners, I'm sure, are with me there.
Yeah.
But it's like, the thing about these rankings is, like, we assume medium outcomes for all the teams, at least except our teams, or maybe the teams we hate, we assume they're the worst. But generally, it's like medium outcome. Is there a world where the Pistons are 11 instead of 14? I think probably yes. I think absolutely, if things go right. And again, some other teams hit their low end, they could be. I like the roster. It's a work in progress. I think they have good players. I think they have a good young core. I like Cade a lot, of course. Like, I like this group.
Honestly,
like even
looking at Orlando, like, both of these teams have young guys that are worth caring about. Like, I think Detroit, Bay, Diallo, Demboya, Hayes, Grant, obviously Cade. Like, there's a lot of really good guys. And if I'm a Pistons fan, I'm excited. If I'm a Magic fan, like, Jalen Suggs is awesome. Wagner, I think, is going to work out. You got both the Wagner brothers. Cole Anthony had really nice moments last season. Wendell Carter Jr., I think that's a really good pickup. Like, it's really a testament to how good the league is right now, where in the past, you draft one good prospect and they're going to propel you to the playoffs. That's not the case anymore, man. Like, as much as I say it tongue in cheek, Steph Curry missed the playoffs last year playing with two max players. Like, are we doubting that Steph Curry can get a team to the playoffs and then he's a good player? For meme purposes, yes, we will doubt that. Absolutely. But at the same time, like, we're talking about a really, really loaded league right now where even the worst teams have a ton of young talent. And it's just going to come down to which teams, which 10 teams in each conference maximize their core, that put the right rotation players around them, that have the right coaching, that understand how to get the best out of their roster. Because, I mean, any of these teams can catch lightning in a bottle. They can have these rosters click. It's just going to come down to who is supplementing that talent in the most effective way. And that's going to be the teams that make the playoffs / play-in.
My issue with the Magic is they might almost have too many of these young guys who they all play the same position.
Like, there's a lot of point guards here.
I think
Jalen Suggs needs to play off of a point guard. Like, I think ideally he's kind of that big combo guard next to a point guard. So I would give the nod to Cole Anthony and Jalen Suggs kind of being those two guards. But it's just a little awkward. And I think it's going to be a growing year. And I think Orlando's another team when, like, as we are acknowledging, they do have a lot of nice kind of rotation players. I wouldn't be surprised if they sold some of those guys off and focused on long-term planning. Like, the intentions of each team, I think, are really important to factor into these situations, because when the margins are thin separating these rosters, it's okay, well, what is the priority of the front office and what's the vision they have for the season?
Orlando, I just feel like I would hate to be the coach of the Magic. And obviously, you know, if any NBA team wants to hire me, I'll do it, even Orlando. Mm-hmm. But like, how the hell do you decide which of these, and health is probably going to play a big role, but like, I don't know, is Wendell Carter that much of a better prospect than Mo Bamba? Probably. That probably says more about Bamba in a bad way than it says about Wendell. But like, they just have so many guys who I think I was high on, or they at least were very high on at some point, who just have not shown nearly enough. And it's like, how do you it's really hard to develop 10 guys at once. That's my biggest. Yeah. I think he's probably there. He's probably maybe shown the most out of anyone here. I mean, Fultz is still here. They have a lot. It's just, I would rather be the Cavs and have four young guys who you're like, very like, okay, we really want to develop these four guys. Five, if you want to count Allen, I think we know what he is. But like the pecking order in Orlando, who is their priority to develop? Probably the guys they draft. I mean, Suggs, of course, is going to be number one. But like, out of OKK, Isaac, Fultz, you know, Anthony.
RJ Hampton.
They still have RJ Hampton. Like, there's so many. I would love for them to. I don't know how you consolidate trade with this group, but I just think I need some clarity from them. And I think they're going to take this year to figure it out, which is fine. Get another good pick and a good conference. But I don't like this mesh of stuff. I like the Robin Lopez deal. He's going to live in Disney. It's great for him.
We can agree that the moral choice for the Orlando Magic is to give Terrence Ross to the Cavs.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, why not? They can go as down as possible to get who Chet. Is Chet the number one guy?
I think Chet's the number one guy.
Is Wemby 2 years from now?
I think
Wemby is, I think maybe
he's
2 years.
Yeah.
He's only like 16. He looks really fun. Hopefully the Cavs are not even close to Wemby by then. That's what I'll say.
Yeah. And the Cavs may be in a position where, and this is the nice thing about the tough schedule early on, like, one thing I do like is you're catching Denver right off the bat without Jamal Murray, Clippers without Kawhi Leonard, week two LeBron trying to integrate Westbrook. Like, maybe you can steal one of those games, or if you do have a decent start to the season, where I don't necessarily think after those 25 games, 19 of which were against former playoff teams, I don't think they're necessarily going to be a 500 team at that point. But if you're still like in that play-in mix during a real tough start of the schedule, that's a great sign. Like, at that point, you might look to consolidate talent. You might put that 2022 first on the market and see if you can improve the roster and get floor raisers around the young core, because the ceiling is going to be raised by Garland, Sexton, Mobley, Okoro, and Allen. The rest and the floor is going to be dictated by the veterans they put around them. So they are in a really interesting position. I think this, I said it at this time last year, we needed to know what vision Kobe Altman had for the Cavs by training camp. And I think we do. I think we have a better idea than we did last season, but this is going to be the make or break year for Kobe, like, both in my confidence for him. And I think there's a lot of doubters, there's supporters as well with him, but how he shapes this roster, I think this is the first year to really kind of shape it in his image. And it'll be interesting to see what maneuvers they make between now and the start of training camp, as well as through the season.
And I think if they do package that pick and maybe put some protection on it. If you don't, I know the flattened lottery odds came at a bad time for the Cavs, and maybe they were picking a little lower. But the thing about it is, if you finish 11th, 12th, 13th in your conference, there's a very real shot to end up with like the fourth pick, the third pick, right? Yeah. Like that's the flip side is, if you are competing and coming up a little bit short, you can end up with another really good prospect. And then maybe things look a lot easier from a year or two, a year from now, and when you're bringing in a really good 2-3, or maybe Sexton gets a paid elsewhere, or he gets moved in some sort of a deal, or maybe someone slides into a Okoro spot for now. Who knows? But that could change a lot of things for the Cavs too.
Yeah, and the nice thing about the Eastern Conference is, if you do miss the play-in, if you're not in that 9 to 10, you're probably getting a top 10 odds pick. Like, look at Toronto. They just missed the play-in and they got the fourth pick, right? Like,
yeah.
So because especially with looking at the bottom of the Western Conference, like, it's a lot weaker than the East. Like, I think the bottom of the West is going to lead to a more top-heavy part there. So the teams in 9, 10, 11, 12 in the West are probably going to occupy those 14, 13, 12, 11 spots in the lottery. But lottery is the last thing that is on my damn mind at this point. But yeah. You can throw a top 10 protection. Like, that's the nice thing in the East. You can throw a top 10 protection because that's basically a lottery protection when you're in the Eastern Conference. But this has been awesome, buddy. This was really comprehensive. This is exactly what I want to do. This is good off-season content. Thank you so much, Ty, for joining us. I want to give you this opportunity to plug what you got going on. Let our listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, I mean, on Twitter, primarily at Ty Windish, you'll find pretty much everything that I do plugged a million times on my Twitter account, TIWINDISCH. But Eurostep Podcast Network, so we just, this past year, right as the playoffs were starting, Rohan Kadi and myself of the Eurostep joined forces with the Win in Six, another great Bucks podcast, Adam McGee and Jordan Tresky. So we have one feed now called Eurostep Podcast Network podcast feed, which go give 5 stars first to the Chase Down. I know Justin probably has a thing planned, but then of course the Eurostep Podcast Network, and subscribe if you're not already, but just great Bucks content. We have a YouTube. We're going to expand more content, more Bucks stuff, comprehensive Bucks stuff. So, you know, if you ever need a break from all the Cavs talk, as wonderful as it may be, want to listen to some Bucks talk, we got you.
Hey, Central Division, baby. We got to stick together.
Hey, on the rise. Quietly on the rise, man.
Quietly on the rise. We just need to take down those Pacers. I'm going to hope that you are right about them, and that that they might be a team ripe for the picking and blow some things up. Who knows? Hey, Pacers, give us TJ Warren. I would like that.
I'd like Brogdon. That.
Brogdon for Rubio. Get off that money. Get off that money, guys. Just... Don't think about it. Don't overthink it. Anyways, Ty, thank you so much for coming on. Make sure, listeners, that you're checking him out. One of my favorite people in this industry. If you want to support us, like you should be supporting the Eurostep podcast, the best way to do so is by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, and resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.